So, as I am writing, I decided that I was going to write a book called Change the Way You Look at Life and the Life You're Living Changes. Living the Tao. And since January the 1st of this year, I have been writing I have this wonderful job. It's just the greatest job. I can't even visualize that I could have predicted this when I was, bagging groceries and delivering pizzas back in Detroit in the 1950s. But this wonderful job, and they pay me, you can't even believe, I don't even want to tell you what they pay me for doing it, but I can't even count it. I need new calculators, all right? And my job is to read a verse of the Tao Te Ching, the first verse, and to contemplate it. Some of this is going to be weird, but when you get to be 66, it's you just don't care anymore, you know. So if it sounds a little strange, it sounds a little strange. But I have created this space where I live over on Maui. And I have drawings of Lao Tzu. There was no cameras in those days. You may remember 2,500 years ago, people had just started crawling out of caves in some places. But there are renderings, there are drawings, there are people who have different visions and versions of what he looked like. He's often portrayed on an ox. And so my job is to take these 81 verses and to read one of them and then to contemplate it for 2 or 3 days, just to walk and to swim, to do yoga, to do all of the things that are just a part of my life every day, and then to sit down in this spectacular, beautiful space that I have created, a place where there are statues and there are crystals and there are photos of my children and there are just wonderful mementos, and it's like it's an energy place. I encourage you to do this sort of thing in your home, to find a place, someplace, a corner of a room someplace, and make it your sacred spot. This is a place where I always have a candle burning, as long as I'm awake. Actually, I have 3 candles burning. And when I'm in that space, when I walk by it, it's like a dining room in my place on Maui, and as I walk by it, the energy shifts in the room, in the house. And I feel myself being drawn into it. And sometimes it feels like it's beckoning me. In fact, I feel it right now. So I got to leave. I'm sorry, I got to... No. And as I walk by it and it entices me to go in there, I get up, if you saw the Inspiration PBS special, I get up 3:15 every morning or so, between 3 and 4 a.m., because it's a very special time, and it's, again, something that I encourage you to think about. As Rumi said, the breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Do not go back to sleep. Do not go back to sleep. Do not go back to sleep. And there's very nurturing, significant message in that poem of Rumi. Do not go back to sleep, because if you can fight the desire, almost everyone wakes up sometime between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. When you're my age, you usually think, well, it's prostate time, go pee and get back to bed, it's no big deal, all right? But there's a calling. These things that occur to us, that happen to us, that are sort of habitual with us, when we wake up, we look at the clock, and very often it'll be the same time. Oftentimes it'll be the exact same moment that we find ourselves awakening, being called to an awakening. That's great. We have all these great ideas and we say, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to do this. Tomorrow I'm getting up. But right now, you know, if I were to get up right now, let's see, if I got up right this moment, and it's 3:30 and I've got to go to work and I'll be 2 hours deficient, so I'm going to be tired all day long if I do that. I better get to sleep instead. And this is just conditioned thinking. It's thoughts. And a big part of today's presentation that Katie and I agreed on is that this is going to be about your thoughts, about what kind of thoughts that you have. How do you think? And the question that you're going to be asking yourself is very often is the thought that I'm thinking, is it a thought that is true or is it a thought that is not true? Is there falsehood built into the thoughts? Because the estimate is that we have about 60,000 separate thoughts every day. The only problem is we have the same 60,000 today that we had yesterday. And then we're going to have the same 60,000 again tomorrow. And then you begin to ask yourself the question of these separate 60,000 thoughts that are just constantly whipping through my consciousness all the time, just seem to be coming out of nowhere. How many of them are true? I mean, how many of them can bear up to the test of truth, that these things are true? Because when you have a thought in your head that isn't true, it changes your whole physiology. What you'll be able to see, particularly this afternoon, as Katie does her work up here with you, is that thoughts that are not true are not just thoughts that keep you from being happy. They're not just thoughts that keep you from having a divine relationship. They're not just thoughts that keep you from attracting abundance into your life. They are thoughts that weaken you physically. These are muscle tests, kinesiology. The heart is a muscle. Every organ of your body is supported by and surrounded by muscles. So that when you're having thoughts, any kind of a thought that is not true, that thought is shortening your life. Literally shortening your life. I have now finished 67 verses of the Tao. And I've written 67 essays on when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And this isn't just a clever play on words here. This is a quantum truth. As my friend Deepak Chopra has often said to me, quantum physics is not only stranger than you think it is, it's stranger than you can think. So that if you look at your origination, the place that you came from, this thing that Lao Tzu called the Tao, this great source that is everywhere, there is no place that it is not. And yet it is doing nothing. And yet it leaves nothing undone. If you go out and just go for a walk this afternoon when you get home, just look at the perfection of all that is. Just look at the clouds and look at the sky and look at the ocean and look at the trees and look at the leaves and even more important, look at the space between the leaves and look at the invisibleness and the perfection of how everything is. There's a constancy, if you will. And this constancy is always there. And your goal, my goal in the time that I have with you here today is to convince you to go to a place within yourself where you can emulate that divine perfection which requires you to do nothing, which never uses force, which never pushes itself, which recognizes something. I'm going to read to you just one of the verses of the Tao and a little bit of what I wrote about it. And I seldom read to an audience because I don't like being read to myself. But I'm just going to share a little bit of this. Here's what Lao Tzu said in verse 29. Do you think you can take over the universe and improve it? I do not believe it can be done. Everything under heaven is a sacred vessel and cannot be controlled. Trying to control leads to ruin. Trying to grasp, we lose. Allow your life to unfold naturally. Know that it too is a vessel of perfection. Just as you breathe in, breathe out. There is a time for being ahead, a time for being behind. A time for being in motion, a time for being at rest, a time for being vigorous, a time for being exhausted, a time for being safe, a time for being in danger. To the sage, all of life is a movement toward perfection. So what need has he for the excessive, the extravagant, or the extreme? There's a time for everything. Imagine if you knew this. If you really knew that what you were experiencing emotionally in your life was a part of what there is a time for. And that you're not really doing anything. Lao Tzu says it over and over again. You're not doing anything. You're being done. You're being done right now. You're one of the 10,000 things. And it is all being done. All of it. Like, I do yoga every morning, or almost every morning, 5-6 days a week. I do this 90-minute Bikram yoga, this hot yoga. And this has helped me so much with just that simple little thing, just remembering what it says in verse 29 of the Tao, that there are times when you're in the midst of yoga, when you have a position where you have to put this foot out, and you have to turn this one down, and you have to get down here like this, and you have to take this arm, and I'm going to do it. And you have to do that for 60 seconds in a 110-degree room. That's after doing many other postures as well. There was a time when I would do that and I'd be so exhausted, and all I could think about was, when is this 60 seconds going to be up? Oh my God, when are we going to be through with this posture? When are we going to get onto where I can lie down on the floor? And finally, and I began to realize as this thing, this doing the Tao thing has really changed me dramatically, so that now when I'm in that position with one arm down and one arm up, and it is exhausting and you're stretching and you've got your arm right next to your ear and you're holding on, that you say to yourself, there's a time for being exhausted and there's a time for rest. There's a time for things not to work out. Imagine if you knew that in the midst of my working with my daughter, for example, when I see the struggle that she's going to, and I can stand back and say, there's a time for her to experience this. And there's a time for her not to experience it. If you read Katie's life, you'll see that there was a time for deep depression. There was a time for fear. There was a time for anger and worry and despair, deep despair. And when you're in those things, if you could step outside of yourself and look at it and say, there's also a time for its opposite. As long as I'm incarnated into a physical world, there's a time for all of it. And as you do, you get to a new place in your life where you begin to look at all the things that are happening to you, because you remember one of the most, verse 40 of the Tao says, it's all about returning. It's all about returning. Returning to what? Returning to the place from which you originated. The first 9 months of your life, you lived inside of your mother's womb in water. And during those whole 9 months, nobody could get in there and mess around with you. Nobody could get in there and get you to worry about anything. You didn't have sonograms that you'd look at and say, my God, I don't have a nose yet. What the hell's going on? I sure hope I get a nose. And you got into nose therapy and you worry about it. What if it doesn't happen? You don't do that. And all of a sudden, perfectly, it all unfolds in exactly the way it's going to unfold, independent of your opinion about it. You're not doing anything. Nothing is left undone. You're being done. You're being completed. And you were totally, completely at peace with it. You were surrendered to it. You allowed it. It wasn't a struggle. It wasn't. And then you popped out of there. And then you said, thank you, God. Thank you, Tao. Thank you, Source. We'll take over from here. And that was the biggest mistake. All of a sudden, you took over. And you edged God out. E-G-O. You edged God out. And you took on an ego. didn't you? And what is an ego? It's just an idea. Just an idea about who you are. Instead of being a piece of God, a piece of the source, you decided, and those around you decided, that you were something different. And if you studied quantum physics, and you took the tiny little particle that began you, and you looked at, tried to find out where it came from, and reduced it down to its tiniest subatomic properties, ultimately you would discover what Lao Tzu knew. That it's the spirit that gives life. That you didn't come from a particle. That particles do not create particles. Particles do not come from particles. Originally, all particles come from an energy. A field of energy that has no beginnings and no ends and no boundaries. And that's who you are. And returning back to that, and letting go of the idea that who you are is what you have, and who you are is who you control. I don't think there's any more all-pervasive theme in the Tao Te Ching than the idea of being a non-interferer. Do you, Stephen? I mean, isn't it? It's about not interfering, isn't it? It's about letting go. It's about allowing. It's about detaching. It's about disconnecting yourself from this belief that you are in charge of other people. I'm the father of 8 children and the father of motivation. That's what they tell me, so I've got... And as this father of 8 children, one of the things that I've recognized and what has made me, I think, a better parent, particularly even since I've been doing this, is my willingness to, I call it the bite your tongue verse of the Tao. Just hang back just for a second, just as you're about to interfere, just as you're about to lay it on and tell somebody else how they should be and what they should do and how they should do it, you step back and realize that what Khalil Gibran, the great Lebanese poet, in writing in the Prophet, said was just a basic truth. Your children are not your children. They are the products of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not for you. And you step back, and I can't even begin to tell you how freeing it is to realize that you don't have anything to do. You don't have anyone to control. You can be at peace. And I watch, and I become much more of an observer, even on airplanes.